is here. Now, broadcasting from the underground command post, deep in the bowels of a hidden bunker, somewhere under the brick and steel of a nondescript building, we've once again made contact with our leader, Mark Levin.
Hello, everybody. On this Friday, I am Mark Levin. Our number, 877-381-3811. 877-381-3811. Many of you are in your vehicles, driving here and there. Many of you are home already, getting ready for a long weekend. So, as is my wont, I want to remind you that the government is closed. It's closed right now. It's closed tomorrow. It's closed Sunday. And it's closed Monday. Do you think you can survive? I think I can survive. Do you think you can survive? What about the one-third of our fellow Americans who are on some form of government benefits? Oh, yes. Did you know that? Millions and millions, 110 million of our fellow Americans are receiving government assistance of some kind. But that later. Why start on such a sour note? I want to start on a really positive note. Our friends to the south, the Mexican government. The president of Mexico was here just the other day in Los Angeles, meeting with the Mexican governor, Jerry Brown. That's right, the Mexican governor, Jerry Brown. Because Jerry Brown is surrendering California to Mexico. And because they have supermajorities in the House and the Senate, and one-third of the people who currently live in California weren't born there, California's going south. So the Mexican president was in California with the Mexican governor, Jerry Brown. They were having a blast, and Jerry Brown was pandering all over the place. His knee was jerking all over the place. Please come in here illegally. Please come here illegally. We'll give you a driver's license, in-state tuition. We're a sanctuary state. We are Mexico, and Mexico is us. It's amazing how powerful a governor is. If he had said, we're going to secure our border and enforce federal law, Eric Holder would have dragged his ass into court. But because Jerry Brown is a governor of Mexico, well, he's compassionate. How can it be that Governor Jerry Brown is compassionate and yet the president of Mexico isn't? Mark, what are you talking about? Well, ladies and gentlemen, something is going on in Mexico. I want you to know about it. Something is going on in Mexico that should upset us. Being compassionate and all that. You see, because the president of Mexico and that government for decades has been playing a game. Attacking the gringo in the north for being so abusive to Mexican citizens who've come here illegally, demanding that they get public education and health care, demanding that when they commit crimes that Mexican law apply, making all kinds of demands on our society, you, the American people, your wallets, your law enforcement, health care, and your schooling. Yes, but in Mexico, the story is quite different. Tell me, if Mexico were a thriving, healthy country, would millions of people be leaving? Why doesn't anybody ever ask El Presidente that question from Mexico? Why are millions and millions of people coming into this country, staying in this country, and leaving Mexico, among other countries, but I'm focused on Mexico right now, because that's where about 52%, give or take, of the illegal aliens come from. Doesn't that tell you something's wrong with El Presidente and his government? Something's wrong with their economic and social policies? Well, here we have an article from the Associated Press in Mexico. And I thought to myself, wow, I wonder what the Mexican governor, Jerry Brown, thinks about this. Mexico's largest crackdown in decades, this is the Associated Press, on illegal migration has decreased the flow of Central Americans trying to reach the United States and has dramatically cut the number of child migrants and families, according to officials and eyewitness accounts along the perilous route. Well, this has me quite concerned. All of these children from other countries in Central and South America who are trying to get to the United States out of love. Well, they're trying to escape, you know, spousal abuse. They're trying to escape crime. They face certain death. How can the Mexican government do this? El Presidente. Where's Luis Gutierrez? Where's the Hispanic Congressional Caucus? They don't even understand where that word Hispanic comes from, the Hispanic Congressional Caucus. It should be the Latino Congressional Caucus, if you're going to segregate yourselves based on race and ethnicity. But that's a whole separate issue. Why aren't these compassionate left-wing Democrats and these compassionate mush Republicans, a.k.a. Jeb Bush, denouncing Mexico? I'll go on. Convoys of Mexican federal police and immigration service employees in southern Mexico have begun scouring the tracks of the infamous freight train known as La Bestia, or the Beast, that has long carried crowds of migrants on its lumbering route north. They have also set up moving roadblocks, checking the documents of passengers on interstate buses. Checking documents of passengers? We're not even allowed to do that in Arizona. That would be racist, xenophobic, discriminatory. Associated Press journalists witnessed dozens of federal police and Mexican immigration agents storming the train as it came to an unscheduled stop in the post-midnight darkness Friday. "We're federal agents. Give up. You're surrounded. Come down carefully," the lawmen shouted to the huddled, stunned migrants. Fewer than 15 were detained on the train that once carried 600 or 1,000 migrants at a time. American and Mexican officials say they are noticing the same drop-off all along the route. The roundups follow U.S. requests for help from Mexico, as well as Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador earlier this summer, when the number of unaccompanied minors turning themselves into the U.S. Border Patrol reached what President Obama called an urgent humanitarian crisis. So this is the question I wish to pose to you. How can it be that Mexico, carrying out our desire to secure their southern border, to prevent the self-importation of illegal aliens, including illegal alien children, escaping certain death, escaping spousal abuse, is perfectly fine. But if we do that ourselves on our southern border, that would be Mexico's northern border, that somehow that's inhumane. I would pose this question to Luis Gutierrez, but the federal government is shut down and Luis Gutierrez has gone home to the Windy City, where a windbag like he is appreciated. Now, I'm very serious about this. Think about this. How is it that the Mexican government and their federal police, the federales, can do what they're doing with the support and encouragement of the United States, but our federales and our locals and our state law enforcement are told to stand down? Can you explain that to me? I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
Yellow, I'm still here. Oh, I be here. Government shut down. My water's still running. I checked that. Actually ran out there, flushed the toilet, make sure the sewage system's working. It is. Check the fridge. There's food in there. Barney's still running around. Woo! Government shut down and things are still functioning. How can that be? And everybody loves these three-day weekends, particularly the people in the government. That's the irony. You can't shut it down. Hey, when's our vacation? Representative Raul, I can't pronounce this guy's name, out of no disrespect, but there's so many consonants, G-R-I-J-A-L-V-A. Do you know how to pronounce that? Grijalva. You have no idea, Rich. But Rich gives it the old college try. Anyway, he's a congressman from Arizona. He's a radical nut job. A Democrat, you might say. And yesterday, hat tip Breitbart, he makes a veiled threat. Cut nine, go.
Many, many families and communities across this country will quell some of the unrest that we're seeing in our communities and the racial overtones that continue to build around this issue. The issue of immigration that for a while was sanitized. We just talked about immigration as a federal policy and a broken system that needed to be reformed. Jose, what has happened is that if more and more of the rhetoric is, it has the racial undertones and overtones. And in many parts of our community, for those people of color, and particularly Latinos that are fourth, fifth generation, they see this also as a civil rights issue in terms of who is being demeaned and demonized by the Steve Kings of the world on the air. And so the overtones continue to grow.
Stop. Who the hell do you think you're fooling, pal? Who the hell do you think you're fooling? First of all, ladies and gentlemen, and particularly my Latino friends out there, you know full well that this term Hispanic, or even when we talk about Latinos, we're talking about people who are Peruvian or Guatemalan, Salvadoran, Mexican. We're talking about people who are Cuban, who are Puerto Rican, Honduran. Yes, believe it or not, I have many friends who come from south of the border and are here legally. And they will tell you their identification is with America, but their ancestry is with that country and the culture in that country. They don't run around saying, I have a Hispanic culture. Nobody even knows what that means if they're from these countries. This member of Congress doesn't speak for all, quote unquote, Latinos any more than I speak for all, quote unquote, Caucasians or Jewish people. And neither does Luis Gutierrez, the self-appointed Martin Luther King of the Latinos. These guys get on TV. He was on MSLSD, of course. Going on and on as if he represents fourth and fifth and sixth generation Latinos. He represents a congressional district. That's it. No more. And yet he claims to speak for millions and millions of people or from south of the border. And he doesn't. And we allow political demagogues like this to put words in their mouths. We talked about this Pew survey earlier in the week, where a majority of Latinos oppose illegal immigration. Go on with this guy. Go.
Anxiety continues to grow. And I think administrative relief now will allow communities to have the kind of real dialogue in their communities away from the rhetoric. Oh. And I hope that the president can help a great deal with that.
So this guy is a race baiter. This guy is intimating that if we all don't buckle to big centralized government and the Democrat Party and their race-based politics and pandering, that there could be violence. This is the new Democrat Party. The party of Raul What's-His-Face. The party of Al Sharpton. The party of Harry Reid. There it is, the new Democrat Party. And now I want to talk to you union members out there. Many of you belong to unions that are member unions of the AFL-CIO. I want to talk to you. How much time do I have here, Rich? Richard Trumka, that big fat slob, I say with all due respect, is selling you out. He's selling you out. Cut 10, go.
How confident are you that the president's going to use his executive action on immigration, deportation, relief, you know?
He's going to do something. I hope it's bold enough to be worthwhile. Here's the story that I relayed to them. When I was president of mine workers...
Stop right there. This clown was president of the mine workers. Obama has targeted the mine workers. Obama's putting mine workers out of work. These are hardly millionaires and billionaires. There was a day when we respected men and women who worked with their hands and did things that most of us wouldn't do and went 500 feet or more underground, risking their life and their health. There was a day when this was the heart and soul of the Democrat Party. No longer. This man has represented the mine workers before he became the head of the AFL-CIO, selling them out to the EPA, selling them out to the radical left phony green movement, which is a red movement. Selling out blue collars to white collars, left-wing white collars. He not only embraces the radical environmental movement, which is destroying mine worker jobs in this country, he's embracing the radical illegal alien movement in this country, which undermines the pay, the jobs of Americans, including union members, obviously. Now, I don't mind Americans competing for jobs all over the world and business all over the world legally. Legally. This is illegal. And what Richard Trumka seeks to do, because he's a patsy for Obama, a patsy for the left, a patsy for the Democrat Party, and I wish the day would come when union members would rise up and throw these bums out and reform their own unions. The fact of the matter is, if we don't secure the border with wave and wave and wave after legalizing illegal aliens, Americans are never going to get good-paying jobs at the lower end of the economic ladder and in the middle of the economic ladder. It just doesn't make economic sense. This isn't about protectionism. This is about law and order. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin, the voice liberals fear most. And you can call Mark at 877-381-3811.
Richard Trumka, the biggest sellout in the history of the union movement, or any other movement for that matter, president of the AFL-CIO, Christian Science Monitor breakfast yesterday, hat tip Breitbart. Let's do this again. Cut 10, go.
How confident are you that the president's going to use his executive action on immigration, deportation, relief, you know?
He's going to do something. I hope it's bold enough to be worthwhile. Here's the story that I relayed to them.
Yeah, tell us, Dick.
When I was president of mine workers, and I went to a convention, if I asked for a 50-cent dues increase or a $5 dues increase, I got the same amount of grief. Mm-hmm. I got the same hate letters, the same mean-spirited things. So why would I ask for 50 cents when I'm going to get the same grief if I ask for $5?
Stop. He's talking about his own members. And by the way, he wasn't a coal miner. He was a lawyer. So now, well, he's a mine worker. No, he wasn't. Look, if I ask for 50 cents or $5 increase in dues, what the hell? I get the same crap no matter what. So I'll ask for the $5. What kind of perverse thinking is that? I will screw my union members. Yeah. 50 cents? No, let's make it $5. He's getting to a point, slow, plodding, but he's getting to a point. Go.
So I always ask for $5. So I said, if you do, no matter what he does, the right wing is going to go bonkers and say he doesn't care about anything, he's not enforcing the law.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
If he does, if he goes mild,
yeah,
he'll energize the right,
yeah,
but he won't energize the center and the left.
Oh, that's the whole
unless
purpose.
He goes bold, then he'll again he'll energize the right the same amount, but he'll also energize the left. And that
what?
Needs to happen in order for this election to elect enough people to be able to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Because
oh.
It is a, the broken system is a major drag on our economy.
Yeah, that's
and a major drag on wages.
Now that's enough as he drones on. So he's saying, go bold, Obama, go bold. Millions and millions, make them legal. Millions, keep the border open. Bring in more. Is that what you want, folks out there in the union movement? Is that what you want? And let me add a couple of other points. The Border Patrol, they're in a union. Most of the ICE employees are in a union. Local and state police officers, they're in unions too. Does this guy represent you? 50 $5. Does he represent you? The hell does he represent? 50 years, half a century. This is what the union movement has turned into, quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Trumka. He's not fighting for his members. Whatever you think of unions, whatever you think of the AFL-CIO, it's not my point. It's not my point. This guy is supporting Obama because Obama's a Democrat. That's all that matters. He's cutting his deals with Obama. He likes going to the White House. He likes eating five-course meals at the Palm, wherever. That's why he weighs about 412 pounds and stands about 5 feet 8 inches tall. With that walrus mustache on his face. There he is. Is this guy a vociferous, energetic, intelligent leader of the union movement?
Listen, when I headed the miners union, 50 cents, I said, well, what the hell? Take as much crap as I... $5.
So there you go. He sounds almost as much of an idiot as Tom Donahue, the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a.k.a. crony capitalism. So you have this guy, Donahue, excuse me, Trumka. Then you have that guy, Tom Donahue, of the U.S. Chamber of Crony Capitalism, that doesn't give a crap about the Constitution or limited government. They're there at the public trough. Now, give me mine, give me mine. Subsidize, bail out, yes. This guy, Trumka, I don't know what they promised him. You know, we'll be able to unionize all these people. No, you won't. No, you won't. You're just helping the Democrat Party get more voters. So they'll pass laws to help you. Meanwhile, you're selling out your current membership. Yes, that's what he's doing. Big labor, big corporations, and then guys like this guy from Arizona, Democrat from Arizona, basically threatening violence as if he speaks for the entire Latino community, which, of course, he doesn't, any more than any of the other members of Congress speak for entire communities. And by the way, somebody running for the head of the Latino community? Is somebody running for the head of the black community? Is somebody running for the head of the European community? What's going on here? I'll tell you what's going on here. This race politics is out of control, and the Democrat Party cannot survive without it. It cannot survive without it. Because the Democrat Party, listen to me carefully, particularly you liberals and Democrats, the Democrat Party has abandoned, has abandoned its industrial working base. It's abandoned its blue-collar workers. Reagan realized that when he was running against Carter. Romney did not realize that when he was running against Obama. McCain did not realize that when he was running against Obama. If I hear any more of this crap, Romney, he can save us. Did you see his numbers in Iowa? Ah, shut up. Guy had his chance. Whoa, the Romney juggernaut. Why? Because his staff leaks to the newspaper? Romney couldn't even beat a lightweight like Obama, and Obama is a lightweight, was a lightweight. The Republicans have an enormous opportunity, but the problem is they don't have the proper leader. They've got John Boehner.
What time is it? 6:40 Eastern Time, p.m., government closed. I'll have another. And McConnell. Talking to conservatives?
Well, if I have to shut down the government, that's what I'll do.
Talking to CNN? I'm the guy that stopped the shutting down of the government.
There's your leaders. And that little doofus over there at the RNC, what's his name? What? Oh, Rince Priebus. Oh, yes, he identifies with the coma. Rince what? Priebus. Oh, yes, man of the people. So the Republicans have an enormous opportunity here. They really do, if they stood for something. They could take so many of these blue-collar Democrats. This is why I think if you read Santorum's book, he's onto something. And some of these other Republican candidates or would-be candidates really ought to pick up on it. If you can win these blue-collar Democrats, or a lot of them, you're going to have a real fight for the Electoral College in some of these bluish states, like Pennsylvania. And there are arguments to be made, policies to be presented, that would encourage them, because this administration is destroying their jobs and destroying their industries. Look how West Virginia has gone from a dark blue Democrat state where no Republican or very few could get elected. Archie Moore was elected governor, but very few. To now, it's becoming a reliably Republican state. We should be able to go into coal country in Ohio and Pennsylvania, obviously West Virginia, in Kentucky, in other parts of the country. We should be able to go to these steel mills now. And we represent the market system and the private sector and wealth creation and job creation, because clearly the Democrats don't anymore. But we don't. And apparently, we won't. The fact of the matter is, just pure numbers now, the so-called white population represents 70% of the country. I'm not playing racial politics. I'm playing issue politics. But I'm dealing with what the left has done and what the Republicans are mimicking. You don't have to play pander politics. You don't have to destroy the country with an open southern border. You don't have to further create massive debt by pandering to this or that. Stand on your damn principles. Relate them to the current day and issues that affect people. Go after votes that we haven't traditionally gotten, but Reagan knew how to get. There's some votes we'll never get. But there's some votes out there for the taking. And this is what is really frustrating me when I hear Romney, Romney, Romney. Romney and his highly played morons that he surrounded himself with were incapable and didn't even seek to identify with millions of Americans who had had enough of Obama but were not convinced to vote Republican. So they stayed home. They stayed home. And they'll stay home again. If Romney's nominated, no matter how many Republicans think he's so wonderful. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
outrageously effective home security. Home security that actually works. That's SimpliSafe, the only alarm I trust. Now, these are guys you can count on to keep your home safe. Here's why. SimpliSafe is so remarkably effective, an actual police force uses it to catch criminals. It was built by a Harvard-educated engineer using the most advanced wireless technology. The absolute authority in the tech world, CNET, gave it their Editor's Choice Award because it's so reliable and easy to use. But here's what really sets SimpliSafe apart. No contracts. Every other alarm company locks you in, and you get stuck for years, shelling out $50 a month. SimpliSafe's 24/7 protection is just $15 a month. 15 to keep your home safe around the clock with no contracts. Protect your home with the alarm I trust. Go to SimpliSafeMark.com right now, and you'll save an extra 10%. That's SimpliSafeMark.com. SimpliSafeMark.com. You know, ladies and gentlemen, what's going on in the country these days and what might go on down the road, I really think it's prudential to have an alarm system. As a matter of fact, it's prudential to have this alarm system. It'll save you money. You don't have one of these contracts. They're not going to drill holes in your wall. It's cutting-edge technology. I have it. And I encourage you to take a look at it. SimpliSafeMark.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the great real reporter at the Washington Examiner, Paul Bedard, he's reporting that the Obama administration has released a huge majority of illegal immigrant children who poured over the U.S.-Mexican border earlier this year into dozens of Tony counties without notifying the public, while deporting only 280. So again, Obama lies through his teeth to us. The Health and Human Services Department released a list of 126 counties, 29,890 of the kids were placed into, sometimes with their parents who are also in the United States, illegally. And of course, Richard Trumka thinks this is wonderful. Tom Donahue of the U.S. Chamber of Crony Capitalism is all for it. Those counties include, some of the most exclusive in the nation, including the Washington suburbs of Fairfax and Loudoun in Virginia, and Howard and Montgomery in Maryland. Fairfax received 1,023. Congratulations. States like California and New York were given large numbers of the unaccompanied children, while Obama's home state of Illinois, where experts expected many to go, received only 175. Why? Should be 17,500 of them. Next year could be even worse. Federal officials who predicted that 90,000 illegal immigrant children will enter the U.S. this year from Latin America are projecting that to increase to 142,000 next year. How can that possibly be? Our friends in the Mexican government are making sure, the federales, that these Latinos from Central and South America, south of their border, can't get to our border, I thought. Or is that all phony? Yes. Phony. And the Republican Party, never forget, 2.5 months ago or so, was all for this. This anarchy was all for it. And the Republican Party, which controlled the White House, the House, and the Senate for 6 years under Bush, did not secure that border. Mark, vote Republican. We'll fix the border. No, we won't. Let me take a couple calls. By the way, I'm going to address something next hour that's very fascinating, at least to me. Let us go to Mark Juarez, Mexico. XM Satellite. How are you, sir?
Well, sir, it's an honor to talk to you, first of all. I was born in Mexico. I came legally to the United States in the 70s. I moved back to Mexico in 1990. I see where you're coming from. Our border, the United States border, is not secure. The immigration system is broke. But there is some good parts of it. When I look at in Mexico, let's say you came down to visit me, Mark, for 6 months. You stopped. You got your permission. You stayed 6 months here. Let's say you overstayed your visa, then you got to pay a 50 peso a day thing because they stamp your visa. There's a fine levied onto you. Let's say you want to stay and work, they'll issue you a F2 visa, which has a UPC scanner on your visa. You go down to the company. Let's say you want to work for Maytag here. They'll scan that. They'll say, okay, you're good to work. Then you can go to work. If it's no good, they won't hire you because that guy will be put in jail in Mexico for hiring illegal workers. So I think we should fluff up these laws.
Well, you're right. Let's start from the beginning. I have to register when I come to Mexico. I have to be approved. I have to have a place of work that I'm going to go to. I am not free to go on what is their welfare system. And I have to, if I'm going to travel the country, I mean, we've gone through their immigration laws in this program. I have to inform the Mexican government of my whereabouts. I can't just roam the country. I've got to have papers. I've got to have, as you talked about, the ability to scan and know who I am and where I am. All these things are required. Meanwhile, if somebody comes here illegally, none of those things are required.
Right. Now, let's just say, hypothetically, you were in Juarez and you want to go to Durango. When you cross from Chihuahua...
Yeah, that would be me. What?
Yeah, you'd have to stop in between the two states, and then the state of Durango will scan you in there. So they know where you're at between the two states.
Does the Mexican government know where about 11 million of its people are, give or take?
Yeah. Absolutely, they're in California, and
exactly.
They're on the welfare system and getting WIC and all the good stuff, right?
And California, here they come. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I shall return.
He's here. Now, broadcasting from the underground command post, deep in the bowels of a hidden bunker, somewhere under the brick and steel of a nondescript building, we've once again made contact with our leader, Mark Levin.
Wow, we have UFC tomorrow, don't we, Mr. Call Screener? Pay-per-view, I believe. Yeah, I know, but the one last week was Fox 2. This is a pay-per-view, so it'll be great. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It be me, Mark Levin. Our number, 877-381-3811. 877-381-3811. Over at the United Kingdom, there's a prime minister who goes by the name of David Cameron. Now, generally, he's not terribly impressive, but he was impressive today. He was very impressive today. I hear these other foreign leaders, Bibi Netanyahu, Stephen Harper, David Cameron, and I think to myself, why are we being punished? Anyway, Prime Minister David Cameron, now, I must say, and we have a lot of wonderful fans in Britain, that Britain is on a steep decline right now, and it's very sad. And yet, it gives us here in this country an opportunity to study what they've done and make sure we don't do it. Problem is, that's not what's happening. But in any event, David Cameron, cut five, go.
But what we're facing in Iraq now with ISIL is a greater and deeper threat to our security than we have known before. Now, people are rightly concerned about so-called foreign fighters who've traveled from Britain to Syria and Iraq, taken part in terrorist acts, and now come back to threaten our security here at home. And the scale of this threat is growing.
It is for them. I read somewhere, wish I remembered where, but it was fairly authoritative, that 10% of Britain is now Muslim. And the most popular name there is Muhammad, of those newly born. Yes, that's a problem. Yes, people are not assimilating. People come into countries, Western European countries, the United States, Canada, other countries, and many of them seek to impose their culture on our culture. That's a disaster. Absolute disaster. If their culture was so magnificent, there's no reason to come here. But it's not magnificent. I said before, some cultures are better than others. Our culture is better than most. But our culture is good for we the people in the United States. We don't want to import other cultures. Or we don't mind some diversity, obviously. That's not my point. I'm talking about superimposing on our culture some foreign culture. You don't see Americans, for the most part, escaping to other countries, the third world country, the Middle East, you name it. You see people from those countries coming here. That's a fact. It's not an opinion. But he said more, and something more important. Cut six, go.
Britain is an open, tolerant, and free nation. We are a country that backs people in every community who want to work hard, make a contribution, and build a life for themselves and their families. But we cannot stand by and allow our openness to be confused with the tolerance of extremism, or one that encourages different cultures to live separate lives and allows people to behave in ways that run completely counter to our values. Adhering to British values is not an option or a choice. It is a duty for those who live in these islands. And in the end, it is only by standing up for these values that we will defeat this extremism, protect our way of life, and keep all our people safe.
You will never hear those words cross Barack Obama's lips. Instead, over the years, we've heard Obama talk about that our country's no better than anybody else's, our people are no better than anybody else's, our culture, you name it. When a president has that view of his own country, his own people, his own society, it's a disaster. And unfortunately, it is a majority view within the Democrat Party who nominated him and from whom he selects his advisors and consultants. It's a fact. You will never hear these words cross Barack Obama's lips, and yet truer words have never been spoken. Adhering to British values is not an option or a choice. Would you hear Obama say that about American values? He says it's a duty for those who live in these islands. Would you hear Obama say it's a duty for those who live in America and our territories? And in the end, it is only by standing up for these values that we will defeat this extremism, protect our way of life, and keep all our people safe. He's talking about the Islamo-Nazis. How many members of the Muslim Brotherhood have been at 10 Downing Street, I want to know? How many individuals who are associated with a Hamas-type group like CARE in Great Britain have had free rein in the British bureaucracy? I'm curious. I made a suggestion yesterday, and I want to reiterate it today, and I really want it to catch on and become law. And that will require, you know, your attention. I believe when an American citizen leaves this country and joins a foreign army or foreign fighting force that is an enemy of this country, that they should automatically lose their citizenship by their own actions. That if they wish to challenge it, they are not permitted to come into our civilian court system and seek judicial review because they have joined a war element, a foreign army or a foreign fighting force against us, we the people. They can seek to get their citizenship back and prove their innocence in front of a military tribunal set up for this exact purpose, holding court at Guantanamo Bay. They are not to step foot in the United States. What's wrong with this proposal of mine? People should not be able to shuffle in and out of the United States. Fighting against us one day and amongst us the next day. The job here is to secure the homeland. The job here is to preserve what's left of the republic. The job here is to keep our families, our communities, our neighborhoods safe. That's the job. When will a member of Congress introduce what I suggest here? It's common sense. It's self-defense. You leave our shores and you join an enemy army or an enemy fighting force, that's it. And if you wish to get your citizenship back, you have to demonstrate that you deserve it. In this country, citizenship has become cheap. People steal across our border, many of whom come here not because they love the country, because they want something from us. Benefits or more? We know this to be true because there's special interest front groups in this country, and the Democrat Party and our court system ensure that if they come into this country illegally, the welfare state will be open to them. Well, why should that be? Shut the welfare state to them, and then let's see how many people come into this country. But that'll never happen either. Because we are a country in decline as well. And some of us, the vast majority of you, my beloved listeners, are resisting it. Are frustrated. I'm going to play this second clip one last time of David Cameron. So you could know what it would be like if we had a president who actually loved this country and didn't want to fundamentally transform it. And as I've said 1,000 times before, and I'll say it again, I don't care who records it and repeats it to try and use it against me. If you love something, you're not fundamentally transforming it. You're not mutating it. You're not fundamentally transforming your wife or your girlfriend or your children. If you fundamentally transform your home, that means you're remodeling it because you don't like it. If you're fundamentally transforming America, you don't love her. If they think the founding fathers were nothing but slave owners, you don't love the country. If you spend your days and nights scheming on how to evade the Constitution, you don't love the country. If you seek to impose your ideology on the American people when the American people don't want it, you don't love your country. David Cameron, who obviously loves his country. Cut six, go.
Britain is an open, tolerant, and free nation. We are a country that backs people in every community who want to work hard, make a contribution, and build a life for themselves and their families. But we cannot stand by and allow our openness to be confused with the tolerance of extremism, or one that encourages different cultures to live separate lives and allows people to behave in ways that run completely counter to our values. Adhering to British values is not an option or a choice. It is a duty for those who live in these islands. And in the end, it is only by standing up for these values that we will defeat this extremism, protect our way of life, and keep all our people safe.
Mark Levin.
We're only a few weeks away from what I consider to be one of the staples of the conservative movement, the Media Research Center's 2014 gala featuring the Dishonors Awards. And I'll be there hanging out with my good buddy Brent Bozell and the rest of the folks from the MRC. I hope I can hang out with many of you. It's a lot of fun if you're in the area. I'm extremely honored. I'm humbled to be this year's recipient of the William F. Buckley Jr. Award for Media Excellence. That's right, I said it. Media Excellence. It's a prestigious award, and it really does mean a lot. And I hope you can join me. Just go to mrc.org/gala and get the information. It's right there on their website. And this year's gala takes place on Thursday, September 25th in Washington, D.C., at the National Building Museum, which is a really terrific venue, by the way. It's sort of like the Oscars, with presenters and acceptors, except it's funny and original, and everybody's actually wearing their clothes. And we're going to enjoy great food. We're going to have a lot of laughs at the expense of liberals and the media. And that sounds like a perfect evening to me. Reserve your seat today and join me and Cal Thomas, Congressman Jim Jordan, talk show host Chris Plant, many other conservative patriots by going to mrc.org/gala. Trust me, this is one event you don't want to miss, and I look forward to meeting you, shaking your hands. Go to mrc.org/gala right now to get your tickets. That's mrc.org/gala. And I hope as many of you as possible will join us, because we are going to have a blast. I guarantee it, because I love this event. I've been there before. I haven't taken any calls today, so why don't I take some right now? Aaron, Huntsville, Alabama, the great WVNN. Go!
Hey, Mark. I want to thank you for having me on the show. Two questions for you. One is...
Call back. Sorry, I can't understand you. Jerry, Ocean City, Maryland, the great WMAL. Go.
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
Let me look. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good, good. Hey, I'd like to just point out that I honestly believe that when we elected this president for a second term, I believe
that... Hold on. We did not. I certainly did not, but go ahead.
Listeners, not the listeners, of course not. What I was going to say is I believe this country stepped on the gas pedal instead of slamming on the brakes. And I believe that that actually shows that this country's in a downfall and that we're dumber than we think. And that there's a lot of stupid people out there that we need to educate. Just the fact that we nominated him for a second term proves to me that we're dumber than we lead on.
Well, those of us who didn't do it aren't dumber than we lead on. Those of the, who did it, they seem to be dumber than they think they are.
When Ronald Reagan was in office, I can remember, I'm old enough, I'm a couple years younger than you. I remember vividly when the hostages were taken over by the embassy in Iran. I can remember where Reagan said that when I take office, the January inauguration, if they're not released, I consider to take over the embassy as an act of war. Benghazi, we still haven't even defined what the hell happened there. I mean, that's just outrageous to think of the contrast between these two presidents. Then you go fast forward a couple of years later when two U.S. servicemen were killed in a German discotheque bombing. And what did Ronald Reagan do? He fired a missile into Gaddafi's tent and killed his...
No. Like what he did, actually, was much harder than that. He sent our jet fighters over there, and the French would not give us passage through their airspace. So Thatcher gave us what support she could, and those fighters had to be fueled in midair. And they hit a wing of his compound in Tripoli, reportedly killing his daughter or stepdaughter or somebody. And after that, Gaddafi was pretty much in a cage.
After that, fast forward, 2 years ago, I remember seeing a picture of Barack Obama with his foot on the desk in the Oval Office, and I thought on the phone, and I thought that was very disrespectful to
it
have
is.
Somebody take a picture of a sitting president putting his foot up, his dirty foot, on top of the table.
His dirty shoe, and yes.
Ronald Reagan used to make people wear a suit to come into the Oval Office.
All right, my friend, thank you. I want to go down memory lane, too. We know. I agree with you. We got problems. I know the man who disrespects his office but demands us that we provide our absolute respect to him. I get it. Nate, Brunswick, Ohio, on the Mark Levin app. If you don't have the Mark Levin app, you don't know what you're missing. You can take me everywhere and anywhere. As a matter of fact, let me just say this. Hold on for a second, Nate. This weekend, if you want to listen to my program, my best of is out there all the time. Isn't it, Mr. Producer? All you have to do is download it on your iPod. So nobody else has to schedule it or program it. You can listen directly to my show over the weekend, and I would encourage you to do it. Yes, Nate.
Hi, I just want to say I work evenings. I don't have the luxury of listening to you live most of the time, and I do listen to you through the app every night.
I'll tell you what. Hold on, pal. I spoke a little long there. We're coming to a commercial, and I want to give you your just due. Okay? Don't hang up. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be right back.
Conservative and proud of it. Call the Mark Levin Show at 877-381-3811.
Let us go back to Nate, Brunswick, Ohio. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi, Mark. I completely endorse what you've eloquently described to so many of us about the state conventions. But given the proclivity for the lawlessness at the federal level, do you think that they would be inclined to honor the outcome of the state conventions? Or would they...
Well, let me ask you a question. The Liberty Amendments that I propose, each and every one of them, secures power to the states. So, as an example, if the federal government ignores one of the... In other words, the federal government nullifies a legitimate amendment to the Constitution proposed by the states at the state convention and ratified by three-fourths of the states, what do you think the state response should be?
I think the states are... The federal government yields its power at the discretion of the state.
Okay, but I'm answering your specific question.
Okay.
The states proceed as the federal amendment, because now it's part of the Constitution, directs them. So it would be the federal government that is nullifying the Constitution and nullifying law, and the state should proceed as the states would proceed. And one of the reasons that I have up there a repeal of the 17th Amendment in the state legislatures, again, selecting senators, is so they can withdraw a senator if a senator conducts himself or herself in a way that is illegitimate. So if you read the book and you go through, there's a method to this amendment process that I put in here, or these amendments that I propose. And so if the federal government says, we're not going to honor those, okay, you come back. Okay, you come back. Okay, you're term limited, whatever you vote on, because you have nullified the Constitution and are nullifying aspects of the Constitution. but, you know, that would be almost a Civil War period, wouldn't it?
Right, that's what I'm concerned about. But don't get me wrong, I don't think we should not go down that path as, you know, a what if.
Well, we're the ones who are following the Constitution, and we're the ones acting with legitimacy. So if we have a complete rogue federal government, that's a wholly different issue in the face of legitimate amendments to the Constitution. The states at that point, having had a convention under Article 5, having the states legislatures through convention or legislative vote passing the amendments, and then the federal government rejects them or the courts reject them, well, then we have a whole different kettle of fish, as they say, don't we?
Dissolving the entire agreement at its base structure. We would no longer have a union, it would seem, at that point.
That's correct. But okay. I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe what's happened here is that over a period of 100 years, chip away, and now we are where we are, and we're being taken advantage of.
Right. Certainly, don't get me wrong. I serve this country. I love it.
I understand. You're raising a legitimate point that's been raised before to me, and it's a perfectly legitimate point. If your point to me is, if the federal government is going to reject the Constitution flat out after it's been amended, if the federal government is going to reject the will of the people flat out, what do we do? And I'm saying that's a totally different situation. Then I fear that what George Mason sought to avoid through this process can't be avoided.
Right. Then we've opened several cans of worms. Then we're in big trouble. Right.
Correct.
Okay.
And by the way, I don't think every single individual in the federal government is going to defy or nullify what's been done.
Okay.
I think there are those who will seek to. But that's why I have a number of things in here. I have term limits for Supreme Court justices, the power of state legislatures to overrule federal statutory decisions within a 24-month period, the power of state legislatures together, three-fifths of them, to overturn federal regulations that have a market value of over $100 million. That's to give consent and the franchise back to the people. There's no reason the EPA should be running roughshod over the country. Whatever they claim to be doing, air, food, water, health, they're full of crap. It's where the rat's nest of the Reds and the left have found a home. And they're using those laws and regulations and abusing them to advance their agenda. There is no reason in a republic why the people can't strike back through a legitimate constitutional process through the state legislatures. Otherwise, we're doomed.
Understood.
There is no alternative.
Great. I wanted some positive input on the situation from you, and that's exactly what I got. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. God bless you. Well, that's what I'm here for, as is well known. I am Mr. Positive. Mr. Smiley Face. Let's see here. Glenn, South Carolina, XM Satellite, go.
Mark, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
The earlier story about Mexico stopping these people just drives me crazy. This has been going on all year, and now you want me to believe that they're now all of a sudden putting their foot down? When are we going to figure out they are not our friends? They knew about this in the beginning of the year. The administration knew about this in the beginning of the year, and they have ushered them right through this country, right to our border. Get a map out. Tell me how you get to Texas, Arizona, New Mexico without going through Mexico. You can't.
All right. But let me say this to you. If we secured our own border, it almost wouldn't matter what the Mexican government is doing.
Yes.
In other words, the Mexican government is enabling the Democrats in this country, and the Democrats in this country are enabling the Mexican government, and more the Republicans in this country are doing the same. The Chamber of Commerce, big labor. So, the biggest fault lies here internally with us.
Yes,
not
so
you
I'm
and
happy.
Me, but with yes. these phony representatives.
Right, but do you remember back when Bush took office and he was talking about shutting the border down, and Vicente Fox, I think, basically told him, if you try to do that, I'm going to...
I don't remember Bush ever saying he's going to shut the border down.
Well, there was talk about it, and the Republicans were pushing it, and Vicente Fox basically said, don't even try it.
Now, look, a federal statute was passed in 2006 requiring securing the border with physical obstacles as well as technological obstacles and alert systems and all kinds of stuff, and Congress wouldn't fund it. Now, does Vicente Fox have that much power over Republicans in Congress?
No, he doesn't.
No.
But my point is I just really believe that they are not our friend right now. They have enabled.
No, the government of Mexico is not our friend. The government of Mexico is invading this country. The government of let's be blunt. For all intents and purposes, given the governor of California and the state legislature in California and many of the mayors in California and the open border in California and in-state tuition and licenses and all the rest, California is halfway there from being annexed, not in fact, but in practice, by the government of Mexico, in my humble opinion. Thank you for your call. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Let's see. Who else do we have here? We have Robert in San Francisco, the great KSFO country. Go.
Hey, Mark. Good to talk to you again. Gosh, Jerry Brown just keeps dumping this state upside down nonstop, man. It's just crazy. Hey, we're coming up on this.
Jerry Brown is an imbecile. He's always been an imbecile. He was an imbecile the first two terms he had. He's elected first when he was 36 years old. He's an imbecile now. But the majority of people in California like imbeciles.
I guess so, man. Hey, we're coming up on this year anniversary to 9/11, and it takes me back to an interview that I heard with Colonel Anthony Schaefer. And it had to do with Benghazi. If you look up on YouTube, Colonel Anthony Schaefer with Benghazi.
What happened?
What happened is he basically came out and said the reason that that compound over there was bombed was because he was sitting there watching the CIA bring in more than 10,000 surface-to-air missiles, and Stevens was getting upset and mailing back to the government saying, hey, this is going on. What's happening? I need some help to put a stop to this. And when he started raising...
Well, hopefully this committee that they've set up finally will get to the bottom of that. And I'm sure if that's accurate that there'll be some whistleblowers who can come forward. Trey Gowdy's been rather quiet lately, but hopefully he'll be banging the drums. I've also heard, I have no evidence whatsoever, that maybe arms were moving through there, but I don't want to speculate. I don't want to be a mouthpiece for rumors. We need to get some facts. And this administration, however, has been in full cover-up mode. We still do not know what the president did for the 10 hours after he left, after the Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State or whomever left. No, the Joint Chiefs. The head of the Joint Chiefs left his office at about 5:15, 5:20 p.m. that night. And before he went to Las Vegas in that campaign. Now, here we are, a free country. Here we are, supposedly a republic. Here we supposedly have a free press, and we still don't know what Obama was doing. And I am convinced he went to sleep. Thank you for your call. And I don't know why we can't get the answer. But Chuck Todd will be heading Meet the Press soon. But will Chuck Todd get to the bottom of it? He's been working out of the White House forever. No, he won't. And, Chuck, what's with the crew cut? Guy's a goofball. Meet the Depressed. I liked it when they had the panel. You know, when they had, many of you don't remember this, but some of us do. They had a panel of reporters. And Mr. Spivak. And Mr. Spivak was a no-nonsense moderator. And they had three reporters, and I remember when the great Bob Novak was one of them, among others, and they would ask questions of the individual. Instead, it's become sort of a show about the host. And if it's a show about the host with Chuck Todd, it's going to fail. Because Chuck Todd, with all due respect, well, I'll leave it at that. Let's see here. Tony in West Virginia on the Internet. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you, Mark?
Very well, thank you, sir.
Hey, it's only the second time I've spoken with you over 3 years, but I'm glad to get through. I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
First, being a pastor, I tend to look at things from a purely spiritual standpoint most of the time, and I believe ISIS is every bit as demonic as the Nazis were. My question is this. About Obama. I'm wondering aloud if Obama is really this incompetent, or is he possibly afraid of this group, or, here's the crazy part, or is he sympathetic with these genocidal...
No, I don't think he's sympathetic with the Islamo-Nazis. But I do not think he's sympathetic also with countries like Israel or some of these other countries in the region that obviously needs support because they're surrounded and so forth. So, no, I don't think he's sympathetic to the Islamo-Nazis. I do think he's sympathetic to some of the radical elements, however. I really do, who he's invited into the Oval Office and into his government and so forth. But I know ISIS, IS, so forth, if he were sympathetic, there would be no bombing whatsoever, don't you think?
Well, this is why I asked the question, because he has had a lot of these groups and a lot of these questionable religious folk into the White House.
Yes, he has, and it raises certainly raises eyebrows, and he's never had to account for that either. But all that said, what his motivations are at this point almost don't matter. The fact is, this is who he is, and the fact is, he is. He's all talk and not even good at the all talk. You heard me play the Cameron clip, but he's really not planning on doing a hell of a lot unless I don't know that he's going to do a hell of a lot. Thank you for your call, Pastor. I'm trying to think this through. I think he's confounded. I think he's confused. I think he wants this stuff to sort out on its own. I think he's unsympathetic to freedom fighters. He's unsympathetic to Israel there. I do think he has, I don't even know how to describe it, an affinity toward the radical elements, but I don't think the genocidal elements. And yet, that's what the Muslim Brotherhood is. And he supported the Muslim Brotherhood and opposed them being overthrown. And it's had members of the Muslim Brotherhood in the Oval Office. You draw your own conclusion. I don't think it's pretty. I'll tell you that. You know, my listeners, you know how proud I am of America's immigration heritage, how it shaped and built this great country. But you also know just how seriously I take the chaos we're facing today. We have an immigration crisis with uncontrolled borders and a president who has gutted our rule of law and plans to gut it even more. And my friends at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR, well, they know this too. They know that the ideas that made sense in one age can lead to catastrophe when abused in another. No, our nation was not built on illegal immigration, lawlessness, and disrespect for the rule of law. And no, our nation was not built on crony capitalists using legal immigration policies to displace hardworking Americans. If you want to find out what we, the people, can actually do to restore order at the border and give America an immigration policy that we can be proud of again, join, go to fairus.com, F-A-I-R-U-S.com. You know, I blew that. It's fairus.org, fairus.org. The point is, this is a wonderful group. They've been leading the cause for decades. Dan Stein, its president and executive director, is a longtime friend of mine. Man is solid. The organization is solid. And they are leading the fight. So get involved. Make a difference. Check them out. That's fairus.org, fairus.org.
Mark Levin.
Richard, North Carolina, another great listener on the Mark Levin app. Go.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to thank you, Dr. Levin, and your father for writing your book about Abraham Lincoln. I haven't read it yet, but it brought me back to the true history of Lincoln. I'd fallen under the spell of some of these neo-Southern people who were sort of had this very sophisticated sounding.
They're not all Southern. Neo-Confederates they're not all Southern. Many of them are Northern.
Yeah, that's true. But I'd fallen under the spell of these people just because I've been reading a lot of their arguments just out of curiosity. And it's a very sophisticated argument in some cases, and they spin a lot of things the right way. But then when I was in high school, I had an excellent history teacher who taught history the way it should have been taught. And it was sort of an inner conflict. And I heard you talking about Lincoln. I went back and reread his second inaugural address, went back and pulled some of my good history books and reread it and realized these people are basically full of crap. I'd been deceived and I was kind of upset and angry, but then it was sort of, I'm a rock solid conservative. I'm not one of these.
Well, Richard, let me just tell you this, because you're really inspiring. You went back and you educated yourself again about Lincoln, as you should about everything. There are people who seize on moments and are self-promoting, or they're promoting a cause and so forth. And just like the left, they feel the need to rewrite history. Lincoln was a great man. He was a great statesman. He was also an imperfect man like every other man. But the fact of the matter is, to call him a dictator and a despot, he could have done so much more, quote-unquote, had he chosen to. But he didn't. Just like Washington could have been a dictator, but he wasn't. And the fact of the matter is, this is why I've brought experts on this program, because I'm trying to get back into the education and information business to undo what some of these nut jobs are saying. We've got a handful of professors, less than probably five or six, who are out there writing books and articles that are absolutely twisting the facts and events in ways, Lincoln suspended what? Lincoln did what? And the arguments are so simplistic, and they are intended to appeal to simpletons. And so if you take your time and you go back and you read what went on and the circumstances of events, you get an enormous appreciation for Lincoln. And it's very, very important, particularly for conservatives and Republicans. Richard, good job, brother. Keep educating yourself, as we all should. I'll be right back.
He's here. Now, broadcasting from the underground command post, deep in the bowels of a hidden bunker, somewhere under the brick and steel of a nondescript building, we've once again made contact with our leader, Mark Levin.
Hello, everybody. Mark Levin here. This is our last hour of the program of the week. Labor Day. Isn't it interesting? Nobody works on Labor Day. Well, some people do, but many don't. So why do we call it Labor Day? Shouldn't it be No Labor Day? Ah, whatever. Thank you for spending time with me. I will be here next week. Monday, we have a best of, and it is a best of. It is a kick butt. Folks, I have been talking to you about the upcoming midterm elections. And I have been sharing with you my concerns that all this talk about a landslide and a blowout and people saying I predict this and the other. Well, it may be, but I'm not so sure about it. I'm not in the prediction game, so I don't worry about that. I'm in the analyzing game. And this Cook Political Report raises some issues that kind of reinforce what I've been communicating to you. And the Cook Political Report, they state that despite dismal numbers for Obama, a public deeply pessimistic about the direction of the country, and a Senate battleground based almost solely in red states, Republicans aren't running up the score in Senate races, even in deep red states. Many are asking why. Why hasn't the bottom dropped out on the Democrats yet? The answer is it already did, says the Cook Report, Amy Wader. Since very early this cycle, both sides have conceded that 2014 will not be a wave election like we saw in 06, 08, and 2010. Voters gave Democrats the benefit of the doubt in 2006 and 2008, only to be disappointed by the overreach of Democrats on everything from Obamacare to the environment. 2010, they gave Republicans a chance to right the ship of state. This is not accurate history, actually. The Tea Party rose up. And I guess those words are cuss words for the Cook Report, at least in the first few paragraphs. In 2010, they gave Republicans a chance to right the ship of state. Today, they have found that the GOP is as inept as the party they threw out of power 4 years ago. That's true. This is an electorate that seems and sees nothing but disappointment when it looks at either party. So while Obama's no good, very bad summer has kept his approval ratings low, the GOP has done nothing to repair its tarnished brand either. Also putting a damper on big swings in polling is the onslaught of early ad spending in our hyper-partisan electorate. All right, well, anyway, the problem is, and I've been preaching this now for months, is the Republican Party doesn't stand for anything. It is not a conservative party anymore. The reason why they're not full-throated against Obamacare today is because they're not full-throated against Obamacare. They have no intention of repealing it en masse. And if they repeal little parts of it, they have every intention of embracing big chunks of it. And I've talked at length about this week and in the past. The Republican Party is a liberal government party. It's not a radical big government party like the Democrat Party, but it is a liberal government party. McConnell and Boehner do not talk about limited government. They don't talk about constitutional government. they pride themselves on surrendering the power of the purse to the most radical president in American history. They pride themselves on it. They pride themselves in sabotaging and undermining conservatives who seek to fight this. They don't give anything to the American people to rally around or rally behind. Just because you oppose Obama and the radical nut jobs in his party doesn't mean that that translates into an automatic vote for Republicans. All of you and many other people in this country are not soldiers for the Republican Party. Many of you are Republicans. You vote Republican. But you're not excited by the party. You're not precinct workers or committee men and committee women. So you need to be persuaded. And the fact of the matter is, not only has the Republican Party rejected conservative principles and participated in Obama's fundamental transformation of America, but the Republican Party has spent the last 2 years raising enormous sums of money from the Chamber of Commerce, from millionaires and billionaires, to try and destroy the Tea Party, to try and destroy the conservative movement. And so Pat Roberts is in trouble in Kansas, as will others be in trouble. Not because of anything I've said or done, but because of what they've done and said. Look at Mississippi. Look what they did to McDaniel in promoting that fool Thad Cochran. And there are a number of people behind the scenes and in front of the scenes who've been working on this. A lot of them come out of the old Bush administration. A lot of them work with Karl Rove. This is incestuous, and it's insular, and it's cloistered. And many of them operate in the shadows, raising money, having their meetings, conspiring against you. And you've had enough of them. There's a very interesting piece in The American Thinker by C. Edmund Wright. I know Ed. He's a good guy. And he wrote a great book on Karl Rove some time ago. And he's a piece in there today, why Karl Rove and the GOP establishment will lose again. Now, I don't know whether they'll lose again, but they do keep losing. And then they have no guts whatsoever. They blame it on conservatives in the Tea Party, and we have no control over the Republican Party. And we're able to nominate individuals here and there, but the vast majority of candidates running are not conservative Tea Party candidates. Here's what Wright says. Karl Rove is at it once again. The so-called strategist is again confusing strategy with tactics. And it's about to blow easy Senate pickups in Arkansas and North Carolina. This is not merely snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, he writes. This is snatching defeat from the bowels of victory in astonishing, tone-deaf fashion. There's absolutely no excuse for not winning these two races. So how is the one-time boy genius doing this? By running television and radio ads attacking Senators Mark Pryor and Kay Hagan from the left. Yes, you heard that right. Rove's Crossroads GPS pack is insisting in their latest ads in both states that Republican candidates Tom Cotton and Tom Tillis are better liberals than Pryor and Hagan, at least on Social Security. So the ads attack Hagan and Pryor, the Democrats, for wanting to raise the eligibility age for the defunct program. And by the way, the program goes under in 11 years. What's Karl Rove's proposal? Karl Rove doesn't give a damn. Karl Rove doesn't believe in anything. And this proves the point. So Wright goes on, okay, so let's somehow miss that Obama and Harry Reid are toxic associations in red states. Forget that Obamacare is showing how big government liberalism is an abject failure. Forget that the VA scandal is showing the same thing. Forget that workforce participation is the lowest in history. Forget that the hated IRS has been outed as an arm of the Democrat Party. Forget that deficits are at a record high. Forget the entire country starting to recognize our national nausea is almost always being caused by too many nanny state liberalism. Too much nanny state liberalism. but can't mention those in the ads. No, no. We have soccer mom focus group data that shows blah, blah, blah. Rove and the GOP elite need to put down their pizzas and get out of the focus group lab and into the real world a little bit. And if they did, it might dawn on them to run a campaign of big issues and overarching themes, you know, to tap into the anti-liberal, anti-big government nanny state mood. But no, that can't work. I mean, those unapologetic big picture conservative campaigns fail every time, you know, like in 1980 and 84 and 94 and 2010. And of course, the moderate fake right go left. Niche by niche strategies tried in 96, 98, 06, 08, 012 worked very well, didn't they? So how does all this self-evident history, not to mention a common sense understanding of human nature, escape all the top Republican messaging sorcerers? One big factor is the isolated bubble that is Washington, and that includes New York Media Center. Precious little reality seeps into this bubble. Conservative columnist John Nolte even theorizes that the media is just as intent on shielding Washington Republicans from their exposure to what's really going on outside the Beltway as they are to push their general liberal bias. And he may have a point. But there's more. Rove is the mind of a tactician, and a good one. He was a direct mail guru for a long time before rising to prominence in Bush's campaigns and administration. The problem is, he's now so involved with strategy and with the main thrust of messaging. Tactic and strategy are necessary, but they're very different mindsets and skill sets. Strategy is a big picture, right brain enterprise. Tactics are bureaucratic left brain endeavors. The tactician Rove simply does not have the right mindset or skill set to be involved in strategy messaging. He's not who he is. No one is wired to do both. Then they go on, or he goes on, right. There's so much that the Republican Party is doing improperly. From the fundamentals, the belief system, the value system, principles, to the messaging, to the wrong focus, focusing on pandering to quote-unquote groups of individuals that, quote-unquote, are changing the demographics of the nation down the road while ignoring their base and refusing to reach out to blue-collar Democrats, Reagan Democrats, who are sitting there waiting for somebody to approach them with an agenda that compels them. We have some of the weakest people ever leading the Republican Party. In the House of Representatives, John Boehner, and in the Senate, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell may not win re-election. He may, but it's so close, nobody knows. There's about five or six of these incumbent Republicans who may not win re-election because it's so close. And they haven't tied up their base because they despise their base, and they've spent years attacking their base. And when Mitch McConnell tells conservatives in one meeting that he's the guy who's willing to shut down the government if Obama doesn't act, and then tell CNN that he's the guy who undoes, quote-unquote, these shutdowns, that's not what we're looking for. It's certainly not going to attract people even outside the Republican Party to vote for somebody. A guy like Pat Roberts is now in serious, serious deficit, serious trouble. And he's not alone, and they're not alone. It's true. But at least they don't have conservative Tea Party candidates running, right? Because we know they can never win. Like Mike Lee. Like Ted Cruz. Like Marco Rubio when he was running. Like Rand Paul when he was running. Like changing the entire House of Representatives so that John Boehner could raise the Speaker. Conservatives can never win. Tea Party candidates can never win. Only mush, rhino, neo-status Republicans can win. Which I suppose is why Mitt Romney's in the White House and why his advisors are keep pushing him as the next Republican nominee. The truth is these people do not know how to win. They are out of touch. They do not know what's bothering the American people. And they reject us. And they reject conservatism. I don't know what's going to happen in the next election. I don't pretend to know what's going to happen in the next election. I don't pretend to care whether my predictions, should I make them, are right or wrong. I do care about informing you. And right now, it's a 50-50 proposition if the Republicans are going to take the Senate. And they should be kicking ass from sea to shining sea, given what's going on in this country, given the president, and given the makeup of the races, the red states that are in play. It's something to worry about for 2016, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
All right, let's go to Victor, Silver Spring, Maryland, the great WMAL. Go!
Hey, Mark.
How are you, Vic?
Pardon?
How are you, sir?
Well, I am nervous about what's going on and what you're talking about. I live in the People's Republic of Maryland.
Yeah.
And I am getting Democrats knocking on my front door, you know, asking me for donations and the like. And I have not yet to see one Republican knock on my door to talk to me. They seem like they're on the phone wanting my money, but I never see them in person, and that drives me crazy. And these Democrats in Maryland, most of them end up, you know, accused.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't blame you. It is very annoying. It's like, the Hare Krishna, Jehovah's Witnesses, of which I have no offense whatsoever. Just don't knock on my door. All right, Victor, you take care of yourself. I remember many, many decades ago when Maryland was free. It was a nice state. Still a beautiful state. But Maryland and some of these other states, Illinois, California, New York, you know the states, the bluest of the blue. They're disasters. And as we talked about the other day, the same liberals, locusts, who do this to these states, then move on to other states, your states, and destroy those too. And vote Liberal Democrat. I'll be right back.
Levin was a kid. His teachers didn't like his snide sense of humor. Today, they still don't like it. Call Mark Levin now at 877-381-3811.
Josh, not so earnest, the spokes idiot over there at the White House. By the way, does Obama not like the White House? He's off again this weekend for most of it, fundraising, going to a wedding. You know, you run for president, you're only there a certain amount of time. I've been in the White House. It's a great place. I guess he doesn't like it. He gets there and he can't wait to get out. Or, and I mean this seriously, is he trying to get away from the missus? Am I allowed to ask that, Mr. Producer? Well, I guess so. I just did. So Josh Not-So-Earnest was asked a good question by Ed Henry of the Fox News Channel. Let's go to cut three, Mr. Producer. Go.
Last week when you made the statement right after James Foley's behead, and within minutes...
Stop right there. You know, they talk about this guy's decapitation like it's old news. You know, last week after James Foley's beheading, by the way, can I have a, you know, Milky Way bar? I mean, it's like, what? Whoa, whoa. All right, let's start from the top. Go.
Last week when you made the statement right after James Foley's behead, and within minutes was on the golf course. Is he detached? Does he feel like the critics coming after him, it just doesn't matter anymore? Why is he still raising campaign money, playing golf, when he's acknowledging he doesn't have a strategy to deal with this?
Well, Ed, the job of any U.S. president is to be able to handle a lot of different responsibilities at the same time.
Stop. This is absurd. A lot of responsibilities at the same time. Not to be playing around and handle responsibilities at the same time. If you want to be taken seriously, you got to act like you're being serious. But this guy's just another spokes idiot. Go.
President has a national security team in whom he has a lot of confidence.
Yeah, nobody else
it
does.
It is also why he works closely with his advisors on a range of issues to make sure that he is leading them in the right direction, that he is.
You know what? Yeah, this guy's just a rambling buffoon. Why don't you ask the question, pal? Because you're not going to, because the answer is unacceptable. Hey, he's got a range of it. You know, he's leading the team in the right direction, setting a vision for the future of the country. No, he's not doing any of those things. Not doing a damn one of them. Are we at war with the Islamo-Nazi IS, Islamo State, the Caliphate? Are we at war with them? Cut four, go.
Before getting to the strategy, though, there seems a fundamental existential question. Is the United States presently
stop,
at war
stop.
With...
Stop, stop. This idiot, this is this MSNBC idiot, Chris Hayes. This is an existential question. Cut four, go.
Before getting to the strategy, though, there seems a fundamental existential question. Is the United States presently at war with ISIS? Yes or no?
Well, no, Chris. What we are doing is we are working very aggressively with international partners, with Iraqi and Kurdish security forces, to take the steps that are necessary to mitigate the threat that's posed by ISIL.
Mm-hmm. So they're not at war. We're not at war with them. The president won't go to Congress. Won't have a joint session of Congress, give a speech to the nation, request the full support of the United States Congress, and destroy these cockroaches. He won't do it. He just won't do it. No amount of horror done to innocent human beings, no amount of torture, no amount of rape, no amount of slavery, no amount of child abuse, none of it. He won't do a thing. Well, Mark, he's bombing this. I said he won't do a thing. This is cherry picking it. This is a serious military action. It's just, it is a very troubling, sad time in American history. Absolutely the wrong person in office at the time when we need a strong leader. And he's not it. And yet we're stuck with him. Let me take a few more calls, shall we? Yes, I think we will. Let us go to Ted in Arbor, Michigan. How are you, Ted?
Good, how are you?
Very well.
Question, do you think when people vote for a presidential ticket, they're voting for that ticket, or it's more they're voting against the other ticket?
Well, it depends. Could be both. Could be either. I don't know. But I can tell you, mostly lately, I think Republicans are voting, not all, but many, against the Democrat. I mean, when you have candidates, I mean, I'm not going to go through the list, but I mean, the guy in Alaska, Sullivan, a Rove, a knockoff there, who Rove supported him and so forth, you know, he's not lighting the place up because he's just one of these button-down Republicans. You can see that there. You can see it now in Kansas. You can see it in a lot of these places. These are nondescript, take off the shelf Republican candidates. And we're told these guys now, these are the ones who can win. Maybe some will, maybe some won't. But, you know, we should be slaughtering politically the Democrats at this point. We should be lining up for 2016 in a really powerful way. But Hillary's out there. McConnell's running for his life. I just think we have all these Ford Rockefeller type Republicans, the old school Republicans who were happy being in the minority. We just don't have the Reaganites out front.
But I think that's part of my question in general is, you know, and I know that the Fifth Amendment, that you're Article 5, But at the same point,
it's not the Fifth Amendment. It's Article 5.
Sorry, I meant Article 5. Aren't we jumping over another principle that was, you know, whenever you have two parties, you're immediately going to extreme, almost by definition. One's going to go one way, one's going the other.
I don't believe history has demonstrated that. You think the Republican Party is an extreme party? I think it's inept and barely on the playing field.
If you have two choices, it's very easy to say polarize to each side. Why is there not more?
That's a different issue. I want to be polarized from Obama and the Democrats. They're destroying my country.
Right.
And I want to offer the American people, I want conservatives via the Republican Party to offer the American people a real alternative, a real option. You see, this language about polarizing, I mean, are we supposed to go along with this?
Well,
I mean, in order not to be polarizing, you would be going along with this.
No, my point is that we're...
What is your point exactly?
My point is, why are you not more... pushing for more parties? Why do you need to have the Republican?
How are more parties going to fix anything if we can't even control the one party?
Because you would have more choices. More people would be voting.
No, you'll have more choices, and the Democrats will continue to get 53, 55, 57 of the percent of the vote, while the Republicans get about a third of the vote, and conservatives get whatever percentage of the vote they get. How's that a winning strategy?
But why don't we try to...
Thank you for your call. I'm getting a headache. Every sentence starts with, why don't we? Why don't we? Why don't we? There are 100 political parties out there right now. There is a Constitution Party. There is an American Party out there. There's a Green Party. There's a this party. There's a that party. They're all out there. So what do you mean, why don't we have more parties? There are more parties. The real question should be, well, then why aren't they getting any support? Because the American people don't want to support them. I'm tired of the fact that the Republican Party, which came into being really through Abraham Lincoln, has been hijacked by these corporatists and these do-nothings. How about this? Why don't we have this party? Why don't we? There are parties all over the place. Go ahead, Google it. You'll see what I mean. So what do you mean, why don't we have more parties? There are more parties. How's that going to fix anything? We need to take the conservative party, the constitutional party, the anti-slave party, the pro-liberty party. We need to take it back from the flunkies who now control it and have changed it. We know what the winning formula is. We've lived through it, many of us, a mere 30 years ago. Now, why aren't there more parties? There are more parties. But obviously nobody supports them. We get these third-party candidates running all the time. And more times than not, they defeat Republicans and conservatives. So how is that a winning formula? I don't understand. And by the way, if you want to do it, I'm not stopping you. Go out there and do it. Why don't we? Why don't you, sir? You get my point, Mr. Producer? All right. I want to tell you about the Tea Party Patriots. Wonderful organization. It's led by a dear friend of mine, Jenny Beth Martin. And thanks to pressure from patriots like you, House conservatives did in fact pass two good immigration bills to deal with the border. Are you aware of this? And they sent it to the Senate. And you know who, Mr. Dementia, is sitting on it, left town. Please sign the emergency petition at endthebordercrisis.com. And demand the Senate pass both House bills as is. Don't let Obama and Reid and the liberals and the usual crowd, the pro-amnesty crowd, turn this into another spending bill, adding to our deficit. Sign the petition now at endthebordercrisis.com or call the Tea Party Patriots and add your name to the petition. 800-370-0939, 800-370-0939. The House bills add nothing to the deficit and would give the states the power to deal with the border crisis. Of course, Reid and Obama, they want to pass their big spending bill, which will do nothing to deal with the root problem. And that's who they are, and that's what they do. The Tea Party Patriots need your help to beat Harry Reid and the open borders lobby. Sign the petition now. EndTheBorderCrisis.com. EndTheBorderCrisis.com or call 800-370-0939. 800-370-0939.
Mark Levin.
I love this song. Perry Mason. Nice and loud. All right. By the way, I keep hearing the network news. They're so excited. A federal judge in Texas struck down a Texas law making it more difficult for women to get abortions. You know what that law does? It requires pristine, sterile conditions for abortion facilities. You know, unlike that one in Philadelphia, which was like some kind of a Nazi experimental operation going on there. Well, we can't have that, the federal judge says. I mean, we have 20 clinics. I would limit it to 7. We can't have hospital conditions for abortions. I mean, after all, it's the right to choose. Have you, ladies and gentlemen, noticed that we, the people, we're not allowed to make these decisions through our elected representatives anymore? We're not allowed to define marriage through our state constitutions and state statutes. Now the federal courts are going to define marriage, same-sex marriage. Just a matter of time. Justice Kennedy's sitting there ready to do it. He's been ready to do it for a decade. Now we have a federal judge in Utah who has essentially upheld polygamy. And if you read Men in Black many, many, many years ago, I told you this would happen. Justice Scalia said this would happen. Rick Santorum said this would happen, and Rick Santorum was trashed when he brought it up. Now we have the courts involved in decisions about contraceptives, the courts involved in decisions about abortion, so marriage, polygamy, contraceptives, abortion, 1,000 federal judges. And somehow they know more than 315 million of us, and somehow their decision should be final, not the decisions of representatives, not the decisions of states, because the left-wing agenda is the agenda for America. And by God, if they can't get it at the ballot box, they're going to get it another way. Whatever happened about the government staying out of the bedroom? Same-sex marriage, polygamy, contraceptives, abortion. Every damn federal judge is in the bedroom, aren't they? The issue is never about who's in the bedroom. The issue is who gets to make these decisions in our society. Well, the individual. Oh, you mean judges? Judges. Our quote-unquote social issues, that is, issues that matter culturally, are all being decided by courts, not by the people, by courts. And everybody wants to turn to the courts for help. Sometimes we have to. But they're as big a problem as every other branch of the federal government. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday. The government is shut down, but America is open. Ray Charles in America for you.
Self, our country loved, and mercy more than life. America, America, make God thy gold refine. Yeah.
sing it something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. America, you know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to shining sea. You know, I wish I had somebody to help me sing this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the week is officially over. The long weekend officially begins. We salute our